John Song, Chapter 15, being read by Peter John Parises, also known as Brian Dean. A Voice Crying, 1934 to 1935. By 1934, John Song had become a well-known national figure in the Christian world of China. He had a list published by the National Christian Council of six notable personalities among evangelical leaders. His contribution to the revival, which was sweeping over large parts of China, especially the north and the south, was considerable. Thousands had heard the gospel from his lips, and as a result had experienced a thoroughgoing conversion, or a spiritual quickening. Dr. Paul Abbott, writing in the 1932 to 1933 Christian Yearbook, stated that, quote, "The work of these Bethel evangelists cannot be ignored in any estimate of present-day religious trends in China," unquote. The Reverend Lawrence D.M. Whittleburn of the United Free Church of the Scotland Mission, on return to Manchuria from furlough, found an entirely different spirit in the churches. All services were crowded, and there was an entirely new interest in Christianity, both inside and outside the church. He attributed this largely to the work of Dr. Song, an evangelist of power and persuasion. Another missionary, somewhat depreciatingly, declared that in Harbin, the church was almost fanatically wedded to revivalism. Following the visit of the Bethel Band, with Dr. Song as the most effective preacher. Everywhere, the visits of the Bethel Band had left a tremendous keenness for Bible study and a generally quickened life in the churches. It would indeed be hard to name a single province of North China where Dr. Song and the Bethel Band had not left behind them a gorgeous record of spiritual blessing and lives cleansed and renewed and set on fire to serve God. During 1934, old Pastor Song, John's father, died. John was far from home at the time and somewhere off the China coast on a small steamer on the Lord's business. As his father, unknown to him, was dying at home, John seemed to see him in a dream, standing by his side and saying to him, S-I-O-N-G-C-E-H, "I have gone to heaven, but you have seven more years in which to work, so labor hard for the Lord." And labor hard he did. His reputation continued to spread rapidly, and everywhere he went, the crowds thronged to listen and hear him. The homespun doctor of philosophy, with his eccentric ways and unpredictable methods, people usually arrived 2 or 3 hours before the meetings were due to begin, in order to be sure of seats. Then they sat on after one meeting until the time for the next to be sure to be present. The meetings always began with singing. Song himself sometimes conducting the singing with a white handkerchief. Often the audience would be asked to clap their hands to the time. Unison prayer followed. Then, after a prayer by the preacher in a few brief sentences, the sermon began. As John walked to the rostrum, he always had with him the precious book in which he had collected his daily jottings, though he seldom referred to it while preaching. On one occasion, while John was busy with the crowd of inquirers after the meeting, the book was forgotten and left lying in the pulpit. When he got back to his host's house, he suddenly remembered it. Hungry as he was, he absolutely refused to sit down at the table until the book was recovered. His companions waited and waited, singing hymns at the piano to help them forget their hunger. And only when the book was found and safely delivered did they sit down to dinner. Dr. Song, at first spoke poor Mandarin, and his enunciation, even of his own Hingwan dialect, was not very clear. His interpreters needed to be versatile and quick-witted men. Frank Lee was such a one. The meetings, though lively, were always under control. He never allowed anyone to disturb the meeting, whether by shouting out an exuberant hallelujah or by getting up to leave early. Any such disturbances met with a stern rebuke. Sermons were illustrated in a variety of ways. Grotesque blackboard drawings and scribbled sermon outlines were commonplace. Sometimes members of the audience or of the band were called on to the platform to help him act out an illustration. A missionary was once ordered to stand with his arms outstretched while Sung preached on being crucified with Christ. Men were frequently tied up with rope and then released to illustrate the power of sin and the deliverance Christ can give. In one mission station, the missionary had beautifully decorated the platform with all her palms, ferns, and plants of geraniums. Dr. Sung was emphasizing the uselessness of half measures in dealing with sin when he noticed the plants. No use just pruning sin. Cut it down a little. You must pull it up by the roots. And suiting the action of the word, he set to work pulling the plants up one by one, strewing them upon the floor. There were no floral decorations on the platform the next day. A favorite illustration for the need to be filled with the Holy Spirit was to have a lighted charcoal stove carried onto the platform. Pieces of charcoal, dirty and cold, were said to be like most church members, and especially a large piece was, of course, the pastor. What they all needed was to get into the fire to make them glow till they were red hot, and he seldom resisted the temptation to point out that it took much longer for the large and self-important pastor to catch fire than for the others. Legends about Dr. Sung multiplied, and the people never lacked for conversation when groups of Christians got together to discuss the great icebreaker as he came to be known. At the end of every service, the preacher would always give an opportunity for anyone seeking repentancy or some other grace to come to the front for prayer. Tears flowed freely as spiritual conflicts were fought and won, sins confessed, apologies made, or restitution promised. Sung himself, certainly during the years when he shared the work with his colleagues in the Bethel Band, gave of his time and strength between the meetings to personal interviews. And there were numerous remarkable instances of divine blessing on his personal ministry. Individuals were brought into the light and many a broken home reunited. John always recorded the name and addresses of such people and added them to his long prayer list. His extraordinary mind was able to memorize thousands of such names. Not only were Christians deeply affected, but many missionaries experienced spiritual refreshing too. Some even attributed their real conversion to his ministry. Soon after leaving Bethel, invitations began to reach John to speak at various Shanghai churches. The Fuchao Speaking Church was the first, and there he had a week's meeting at which 63 people found Christ. The name of the church was the Hall of Joy and Peace, and after his recent experiences, John found comfort in the name. The next church to invite him was the Hall of Abundant Virtue, and there were over 100 conversions. Then the Ministerial Forward Movement Committee arranged for 3 days meeting for the whole of Shanghai in the Woods View Hall to coincide with the spring festival holidays. Over 1,000 people attended the meetings. Finally, the Pure Heart Hall invited him for a week's meetings, and about 200 school children professed to believe. John took courage and looked forward to an even greater ministry than hitherto. Several churches were competing to get Dr. Sung to be their pastor, so he began to pray, "Lord, if you want me still to be an itinerant evangelist, please open the door for campaigns in 5 provinces and send me $800 for my expenses within the next month." As soon as news of Dr. Sung's new situation got abroad through the pages of the Evangelism Morning Star and other publications, invitations poured in. They came from 5 provinces of K-I-A-N-G-S-U, C-H-E-K-I-N-I-A-N-G, A-N-H-W-E-I, Hopeth, and Sheng Tung. And registered letters reached him from Shaanxi, Paoting, Peking, Shikith, Wath, Potao, Saratis, and other cities, with money gifts ranging from $20 to $50, some of them from anonymous donors and others from people he did not know. The total exceeded the sum he had asked for. He was completely reassured. I offered myself again to serve my faithful, unchanging Lord, come wind, come weather, through clouds and sunshine. If God is with me, I ask for nothing else. John's first mission on his own outside Shanghai was at Xinjiang. It's Xinkiang, a city some distance up the Yangtze River from the coast. He divided his time there between three churches, and many found Christ, including some notable sinners. At Suzhou, South John spoke for the first time in Mandarin without an interpreter, and was pleased to find that he was well understood. Continuing his journey, he paid his fourth visit to Tianjin and Shantung capital, where businessmen, government officials, members of the medical profession, and university students were among the great crowds that followed to hear him preach. Then there followed another tour of many Shantung cities, and it was Dr. Sung's aim to correct the thinking and the erroneous interpretations of scriptures, which were causing such a chastal state of affairs in so many of the churches. Elsewhere he went, he found great zeal, which he attempted to direct into scriptural channels. Long-standing breaches between missionaries and Chinese were repaired. Very many young people were brought to Christ and given a vision of saving China with the gospel. Two paralytics were healed, and one demon-possessed man was delivered. Rumors that Dr. Sung's doctrine had gone astray were confounded, and wherever he went, God confirmed his word with signs following. Meanwhile, the Christians at Tianjin heard that Dr. Sung was in Shefu and sent an urgent invitation to him to revisit them. When all of the Tianjin churches refused permission for the use of their buildings for the special purposes, a large ancestral hall was hired, and there were two meetings a day, attended with remarkable blessing. But some of the prominent men in the churches started a campaign of vilification of Dr. Sung and opposed the work in every possible way. The inevitable consequence followed, and over 300 Christians left the churches and began to worship God together in one place. A suggestion to build a new hall for the proclamation of the gospel was acclaimed, and after prayer for guidance, a fund was opened the very same day. Nearly $8,000 were subscribed on the spot. The sole motive in opening a new hall was to preserve liberty of worship and to proclaim the gospel. Dr. Sung therefore warned them against a sectarian spirit and urged them to endeavor to preserve the unity of the Spirit. A committee was appointed, and a year later the new hall was completed and dedicated to the Lord's service. The work was so prosperous, and there were so many conversions, that the original preaching band organization eventually became an independent church. This is the only case of a separate church group arising out of the work of Dr. Sung, and in this case it was not his original wish, but was forced upon the Christians by the attitude of the churches. The new church became by far the largest and the most active witness for Christ in the large city of, it's spelled Tianjin. From there, Dr. Sung paid a flying visit to Peking before traveling south again to the lovely lakeside city of Hangzhou in the province of Chekiang. The church leaders united to welcome Dr. Sung, and 10 days of meetings were arranged. There was another deep work of God, and many who had been just church members were born again and became real Christians. 50 preaching bands were formed. While in Hangzhou, Dr. Sung learned that Dr. Sherwood Eddy was due to hold a meeting a little later. Believing him to be a liberal and to have departed from his early evangelical faith, Dr. Sung did not hesitate to denounce Dr. Eddy and did his utmost to persuade people to boycott the meetings which had been arranged. 10 days meeting followed in the Moore Memorial Church in Shanghai, when emphasis was laid on a close walk with God and a constant witness if backsliding was to be avoided. John was saddened by seeing some of the earlier converts going back. At Hu Chao, after Dr. Sung had first come into the limelight after leaving his own providence, he now demonstrated that it is not necessary to attract people to church with film shows and social activities of various kinds. The pastor was dubious whether there would be as many as 100 people to hear an evangelistic sermon. There were actually nearly 700, of whom many were saved and organized into 50 preaching bands. Later, John returned to Hangzhou for a two-week convention at two churches. During this time, Japanese planes machine-gunned the city, but the meetings went on, and in spite of much opposition, there were many saved and stirred up to serve God. From Hangzhou, Dr. Sung went to Nanking, the national capital, which had hitherto been largely unaffected by revival movements. The meetings were held in the Quaker church, and huge audiences crowded to hear him. The rank and file of the church loved him, but the usual harsh criticisms of the leaders angered them and made it difficult for them to receive help from him. His testimony of renunciation had also had an unintentional effect. Some earnest school children were impressed with the idea that education had little value and that it was more urgent to preach than to study. This created some disciplinary troubles in some of the Christian schools, but a lasting work was done. Hangzhou was again visited for a convention before John turned his steps once more towards his own native providence and the commencement of an even wider ministry, which was to reach out beyond the shores of the China mainland. The voice crying in the wilderness, "Prepare ye the way of the Lord," was the authentic voice of a prophet. Everywhere it awakened the response, "What shall we do then?"